Gospels. It reveals to us and reminds us of the purpose of life, the divinization of creation, especially our humanity. It's not a teaching lesson to learn the law of God. It's an experiential encounter where the humanity of Jesus is affected. The clothing of Jesus is affected, and the disciples are affected. It's not memorize this teaching of Jesus and prepare for the exam before the pearly gates. No, it's wait with trust and loving expectation for the divine glory, the divine light to shine on us and transform us. A picture is worth 1,000 words, right? And transfiguration is worth all the words of the whole world. We human beings love light. We were created for light. Even if sometimes we hug the dark to try and hide certain things, even in those circumstances, there's still part of us that hates that. We'd rather there was nothing to hide. We'd rather live and walk in the freedom and in the delight of light. And the gospel reveals that future to us. Shortly before this gospel, Jesus was teaching about how he would soon experience suffering and death, and how this was necessary in order to experience eternal glory. And the apostles are heartbroken by this, scared to death by this, dejected by this. You know, Peter is humbled by this because he had tried to take Jesus away from that path. Right? The gospel that describes that says he took Jesus by off to the side. It's almost like he grabbed him by his lapels and pulled him around and said, "No, not that direction, this direction." And Jesus called him a Satan, one who was an obstacle to the divine plan. That's what Satan means, an obstacle. Whenever we get in the way of the divine plan, we act like a Satan as well. In the temptation accounts that we heard last Sunday, the great Satan twice took Jesus to a place of temptation. The Greek verb there of taking is the same as what Peter did. It's never good for a creature to try to take the Creator anywhere. And today, finally, we hear that Jesus, the Creator, takes three of his disciples up the mountain. Now the right person is doing the taking. And there on the mountain, he's transfigured before them. There's this experience of divine light bursting forth from his human flesh and blood. And it's not the case of him reflecting the shining light of the sun. Rather, he himself is the source of that shining forth like the sun. And this divine power that radiates out from him makes his clothing like light. It transforms without destruction. The divine power doesn't overwhelm and destroy what's weaker. It transforms and raises and harmonizes with what is less to make it more. That's also what happens in our sacraments, where creation is raised into harmony with the divine to communicate grace. Peter, James, and John also begin to be affected by his radiance. Peter is drawn to that radiance. Lord, it's good that we're here. But then he wants to capture it and contain it and control it. Let me make three tents, one for you, one for Moses, one for Elijah, and then you can stay right here. Don't go beyond that. Never leave. But divinity has no interest in being contained or controlled. And immediately, before he even finishes speaking, a bright cloud overshadows them. The cloud is bright, just like the brightness streaming from the face of Christ. Because the source of the cloud's brightness is the Father. And indeed, the brightness or light of glory streaming from both Christ and the Father is the Holy Spirit. From this bright cloud overshadowing them, just as the Spirit had overshadowed the Virgin Mary, the Father's voice is born forth. In all of the New Testament, the Father speaks twice, at the baptism and at the transfiguration. In both instances, he says the same thing. This is my beloved Son, with whom I am well pleased, in whom I take delight. It's another way to translate that. The only difference between the two is the additional command today. Listen to him. It's kind of like I said this to you once before, right? Listen to him. In the New Testament, the whole revelation of the Father is his beloved Son. It's like him saying, what more can I give to you than my only begotten and beloved Son? We delight in each other. That's why you see glory streaming from his created body. Because his obedient love, his willingness to embrace the cross for the salvation of this fallen world delights me. My beloved Son, in whom I delight, listen to him. And the response of the disciples to this declaration of mutual divine love, it's not to, ooh, ah, look at that. They fall flat on their faces in fear and trembling. And that's the appropriate response. We who are but dust and ashes should have fear and trembling before the divine presence. And this fear and trembling, this kind of fear and trembling, it's a mixture of humility and love and respect and overwhelming awe. We should approach the divine with this, that kind of fear and trembling. It's like, I love you. But because I love you so much, I'm scared. Because I'm not worthy. And I don't want to offend you, but I don't want to stay away from you either. When we approach him with that kind of fear and trembling, then Jesus will do the same for us that he does for the three on the holy mountain. Jesus comes to them, touches them, and raises them up. He comes down from the heights to our level and with his healing power touches us and raises us up. Jesus and the three apostles in that scene foreshadowed the process of redemption. When we bow low under the weight of the cross, under the weight of our humility, then we're ready to receive the divine embrace that raises us up. In the vision today, we see the light of divine life streaming from the face of Jesus. In a few weeks,